Coming to you from various places around the world, this is the Global Exhibitor Podcast, the podcast designed to help exhibitors succeed internationally.
Actually, it's the best education anyone can ever have to be able to go and visit all these places in the world where you'll learn stuff about their culture. You learn things about yourself, but it's learning to communicate, it's learning how to cook, it's learning how to get on with a multitude of people from different backgrounds, with different aspirations and different ways of life.
Your host for the Global Exhibitor Podcast is Jeff Hanna, a designer, entrepreneur, business strategist, industry thought leader, and student of world cultures based in the United States. Here's your host, Jeff Hanna.
Well, hello everyone. We're broadcasting today from London with our special guest, Miss Chloe Richardson. Chloe is a linguist and a sales strategist within the exhibition and trade show industry globally. She speaks about five or six languages and teaches language. She also works in the exhibition and trade show industry, specializing in sales strategy, rebooking, sales team support, business development, client engagement, the customer journey, and process management. And she also does translation work on a pretty regular basis. Chloe's home base is in London, where she is today, but Chloe works in a diverse array of industries across the world, including Europe, North America, Russia, Eurasia, China, India, Southeast Asia, Africa, basically everywhere. Chloe holds a Bachelor of Arts degree in French and Portuguese from the University of Southampton in the United Kingdom. And a bit of secret about Chloe that I happen to know is that she spent a significant amount of her time working in the entertainment industry. She's a very talented vocalist, pianist, and actress. Chloe is just super talented, extremely articulate, and just fun to be around. You're going to really enjoy this interview. Chloe shares lots of great insights with us across this three-part series. We're going to be focusing on the importance of language in relation to travel and to the trade show and exhibition world in general. She will also be talking about cultural differences, travel tips, how to engage with strangers, how to create trust and respect, perceptions across borders, and developing a better understanding of the audience you're trying to reach or engage with. There's some really great stuff here. So let's get into part one of my interview with Chloe Richardson on the Global Exhibitor Podcast.
I've really been looking forward to this conversation today with Chloe Richardson, who's from the UK. And I first met her when I was speaking at a conference in Chicago. As I was asking questions about different cities around the world that we were talking about and who had been there, she raised her hand for almost every one of them. And I know she was becoming reluctant to do that because she might have felt a little bit embarrassed at that point. I'm not sure. But anyway, she had been to so many places and it stood out in my mind. She had great answers to all the questions and good input to offer. So I thought it was fantastic. And I'm so happy to be interviewing her today on the Global Exhibitor Podcast. Welcome, Chloe, to the program.
Thanks, Jeff. I'm really honored and flattered to have been asked. So lovely introduction. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm intrigued by your background and your interest in international and all things culture and the trade show industry. And even last year, I think you were in almost 30 countries. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, sort of over the last 3 years, especially, I've gone to pretty much every corner of the globe, specifically to trade shows, whether this is B2B or B2C. And it spans sort of from the Middle East and then Eastern Asia and then Southeast Asia all the way back over to the US and then down to South America and then touching throughout all of Europe, including sort of your Russia and your Ukraine. So it's been a really exciting global journey over the last few years. And I think especially now when the business world is effectively, everyone is now connected. It's so interesting to be able to see all these different places and how they do business and how trade shows work. And even something as sort of minuscule as how people communicate face to face in a sales context. It's been really, really interesting. So yeah, I've been to quite a few places in the last few years. I can't complain about that.
That's awesome. How important is understanding another person's culture or their cultural context when you're trying to communicate to them, especially if you're meeting them for the first time, they're a stranger to you, they don't know you, you don't know anything about them. How does culture play into that? And do you try to size them up, if you will, to understand or get some kind of idea of where they're from and let that play into how you communicate with them?
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, I think having some sort of knowledge or understanding of where somebody's from and the experience that they've had culturally throughout their lives, when you're making that sort of connection, whether it's personally or professionally, knowing about somebody's culture is fundamental to be able to establishing a real connection and also being able to dig a little bit deeper. So I think when you meet somebody for the very first time, especially in a business context, understanding where they're from not only affects how you actually communicate with them. So obviously some traits may be offensive in some cultures, some may be seen as really polite, that it's important about the formalities, the informalities, that's really key. But it's not just that, it's kind of having a bit of knowledge about their culture can set you off with a great first impression. It puts you on a great footer because they can relate to you straight away. So even if it's you know something about where they're from, or you know something about their traditions, or you know something about a historical place that's sort of in their local area, being able to connect on that kind of level really, I think, sets you apart. And that's kind of why I think nowadays, especially having a cultural understanding, especially in business, to make that connection that's deeper than just a really farcical, shallow conversation, it establishes a connection, but it also cements it. And I think having that there and that cultural knowledge, whenever I go anywhere, I make sure that I read up on a place, that's for sure. Because it's interesting to understand their history, but it's not only that, it's having the communication skills. And even if you can only say a few words in their language, even if it's just a greeting, you see the look on their face, they are immediately opening up to you. And it's kind of, it shatters that barrier, because we all know the first time you meet somebody, especially in a corporate world, they're gonna have barriers up. They're thinking, she's trying to sell me something, what does she want to sell me? And if you come in with something that brings them back to home, brings them back to an environment where they feel comfortable and safe, then automatically they're going to establish a connection with you that's stronger, and that's really important. So yeah, I would say culture is definitely a huge, huge part in communication and understanding culture and embracing it as well. And I think not only in the business context, in sort of the way that we all develop personally and the way that we develop our experiences and our friendships, having a knowledge of how the world works and how different cultures can react and interact with each other is absolutely key to move forward. So I'm a big advocate of knowing a bit about the culture of a country and a nationality before you go there.
Totally agree. You're a linguist, so I mean, you do speak multiple languages, I think maybe six, if I'm not mistaken, but I'm curious how you became a linguist. You know, what was driving that desire, or maybe just a passion to learn languages, and how you've been able to learn those?
Yeah, okay, so I mean, the language thing sort of came about. One thing that I've loved ever since I was a child is just speaking and just communicating with people, and it kind of was made apparent when I was 14, I decided to go and do something in the UK where we do work experience, and we go to a month in industry and work for a little while, and then it adds to your college score. And when I was 14, instead of sort of going to the local area or going to a shop or something, I decided to go to France and give that a go out there, because as far as I was concerned, it was just opening up a whole new set of doors for me. And as a 14-year-old, the idea of being able to speak a different language with all these people around me was so exciting. It was something that I had never experienced, but I was definitely ready to do it. And so I started speaking French at 14. I ended up living out there sort of 7 years on and off. I then went to uni and decided sort of last minute to pick up Portuguese on the side and study both French and Portuguese, which then proceeded with me going out to Brazil, where I lived for a year and traveled around South America. So obviously in turn picked up Spanish whilst I was out there. And you know what it is? It's the great thing about language. And I say this to everybody I meet, you don't need to be good at language, because the only thing really the human brain is built to do is to communicate. And all you need is confidence. And so many people I meet and they say, oh, I wish I could speak languages like you, things like that. And it's just, you just need to immerse yourself in it. And you just need to throw yourself into it and think, you know what, I'm going to look stupid, because all of us do at the start. It's absolutely natural. When you're saying a word, you don't know the phonetics, you come out, you sound absolutely daft, but that's a stepping stone. And the end goal is feeling comfortable speaking that language. So I think once you kind of got one under your belt, they say that the universal cognition sort of opens up then, and it's so much easier for you to pick up other languages because your brain has worked out the patterns and the algorithms. And so if you learn, for example, one Latin language, actually the likelihood is learning your second, third, fourth and fifth is going to become a lot easier. Now, there's plenty of languages I've never studied, but I can understand. So if I went to Italy, I know I'd get by and I'd be able to speak to anyone about anything. Yeah, of course, it will be sort of merging bits of French, Spanish, Portuguese. But actually, the end result is I'm being understood and they're understanding me and they appreciate the fact that I'm making the effort trying to speak it. Now, when you're crossing over boundaries in terms of the root of the language, so when you're going into the Slavic languages or into obviously the Chinese-based languages or the Hebrew, that's different because it's a different alphabet. But again, it's the same thing. You just need to throw yourself into it and be confident and people are going to laugh. But that's okay. Laughter also is another great way to communicate. So why not? Why not all laugh together about how rubbish you are at speaking language? Because you're going to keep going and it's going to, in the end, you're going to be good at it. And it's so funny because I work in sales now, but I'm not a salesperson. And I say this so much. I just love to communicate. And it's been born from that desire to speak to as many people as possible and as many languages as possible. And also it opens up the world to you because when you've picked up a few languages, it means you can travel to a lot more places. It means you can work in a lot more places. And we'll probably get onto this a bit later, but especially being a Brit who speaks multiple languages, business-wise, professionally speaking, it puts you in such a good position because the world is so small now. And the more languages you speak, the more people you can relate to, it makes you so much more employable, especially in the trade show industry. Because at the moment, I mean, the amount of international exhibitors you have at every single show you do, especially B2B, the numbers are phenomenal. So why would you ever hire a salesperson who speaks one language if you could find one that speaks 10 and is essentially doing 10 people's jobs, right? So, yeah. I mean, for me, languages open so many doors. They develop you as a person. They also develop your interests because part and parcel of that, obviously, if you go to Brazil, not only are you going to learn language, you're going to learn about the culture, you're going to learn new food, new music. It really enriches your life in so many different ways. And so I say this, I teach privately, I teach French and Portuguese to sort of GCSE and A-level students, which is our 16 and 18-year-olds. And I sort of, the first thing I ever say to them is I sit them down and explain why it's so important that they study languages and the amount of doors it opens and the amazing experiences they're going to have that are going to change their lives. And they sort of look at me and they think, at school they don't tell you that. At school they say, learn these tenses, learn this vocabulary and pass your exam, but they don't tell you why you're doing it. Yeah, language learning is the way forward, I think. And it's a bit of a shame because I don't know what it's like in the US, Jeff, but in the UK, at schools, it's become, they're taken out of the curriculum, so kids don't have to learn language. The amount of universities that actually provide language courses is dropped by 30% over the last sort of 12, 13 years. And stats like that are terrifying. When the world is opening up and languages are intermingling, the fact that we aren't promoting it as a country, it's absolute madness because it's going to end up that in 20 years, the Brits are going to be so far behind everyone else because we can't communicate on the same level that everyone else can. And I just think that's a shame. Is it similar in the US?
You know, there's, I think, generally speaking across the board, requirement of about 2 years of foreign language in high school. And a lot of colleges do require it. I don't know to what degree in particular they do require it. But even though US is a big country and you have a lot of people that speak Spanish and a number of other languages here and there, but most people consider the US, at least much of the US, to be monolingual, which does make it a challenge when we're traveling outside the US. So many people do just assume that, you know, if they're in France or whatever, they start speaking in English to the people there, mm-hmm. hoping that somebody's going to understand them. I do give great credit to the British for the colonization of the world that has happened over the last hundreds of years that has allowed or paved the way for so many people to speak English, really, and to be able to communicate, and it makes it easier for people like us. But I totally agree with you about the aspect of language. It's fun to do it. You said, you know, it makes you look daft or, you know, whatever. It is awkward and difficult at times, especially if your confidence in doing it is very low, but you just have to put yourself out there and try it. When I first started in the industry, I was working a lot in Latin America, for example, and I would call up Argentina or whatever, and they kept hanging up on me because no one spoke English. So I finally had to learn how to ask for a certain person in Spanish. And then, so you just add to it over time. Of course, mm-hmm. then you run into situations like I did a few years ago. I was in a Mexican restaurant, and often if you're in a Mexican restaurant, this sounds stereotypical, but many people in a Mexican restaurant generally do speak Spanish, not always. But I was talking to one guy and he never responded back to me. And another person said, oh, he's Vietnamese. So it's no wonder I'm sitting there trying to speak to him in Spanish and he was from Vietnam. So I'm like, well, you got to kind of, sometimes your profiling might be a little bit off, but.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I think you do have to be careful, don't you? Because you don't want to ostracize people. And I get it quite a lot. So I can sometimes, I get really excited when I see someone's not British and I'll be like, oh, where are you from? So because I want to communicate with them in their mother tongue. And sometimes, especially in the current climate being what it is with Brexit and everything that's going on, sometimes people say, oh, why are you asking where I'm from? As though it's like a negative connotation. And I'm like, oh, no, because we've got a lot of Eastern Europeans who live here and I've just started trying to learn Russian. And so I really want to practice. And they're not used to a British person asking them where they're from because they want to speak to them in that language. They're used to British people asking because they want to talk about Brexit. But I completely can relate to when you go abroad and people hear that you're American or British and they decide right away, there's no way you're going to be able to understand what they're saying. So they'll either ignore you or speak to you in English. And that can be frustrating because it means we don't learn. And the colonization is a good point. But you know, the colonization of the world by the UK has actually made us so lazy. I mean, obviously, there's loads of other negative sort of outcomes of all of that stuff. But it's kind of as an English people, we now don't need to learn other languages to get certain distance. And that's a shame for us, really, in the long term, because it makes us lazy. It makes people think, oh, she's a Brit. She's not going to be able to speak my language. But there's been quite a few occasions, especially in London, actually, where there've been a group of people speaking in a language about me or about one of my friends or about English people in general, and I can understand them. And I'm sat there thinking, you should really not assume that all English people don't speak any other language. Because some of the things they say when they think that you can't understand them, it's quite funny. But so that would be one message. Always be careful who is around you when you're speaking negatively about something.
That's true. So going to the colonization thing for just a moment, I found, and I know so many other people as well, similar to you from the UK, that it's very typical or common for them to spend a part of their life, early life, abroad. And it's sort of like part of your DNA, if you will, to go to another place and live and to learn about other cultures and living and traveling abroad. Is that true? And what's driving that?
You know, it's interesting that you say that because I think it really depends on this is sort of breaking down the geography of the UK now. So if you are born and raised in the South, I would say you probably have a lot more of a likelihood to travel abroad, especially as it's right on your doorstep. I mean, from London to Paris, you can get a train. I think it's like an hour and a half. It's absolutely ridiculous, like the ease in which you can get into mainland Europe. And then that opens so many doors because from mainland Europe, you can access the rest of the world. And I think there's that part of it because it's just the accessibility. I mean, in the States, you have to fly on a plane for upteen amount of hours to get anywhere at all where they're going to speak another language as their first mother tongue. Whereas for us, France is on our doorstep, Spain, an hour and a half, Germany, less than an hour. So we've got that luxury. But it's, regionally in the UK. So where I come from up north, in Yorkshire, actually, there are loads of people who have never left the country. They don't have passports. Learning languages to them seems like a waste of time. And I think that, is it maybe a class thing as well? I'm not sure. It's just kind of, I think the way that the North feels like they've got more of a perhaps northern society. I don't know what it is, but I think it's interesting that you get that perception because actually I think we are bad for travel and we don't do it enough. And when we do have the whole of Europe on our doorstep, I mean, you can get a flight now from the UK, you can get a return to anywhere in Europe for £29, which is what, like $35 for a return flight. And that's crazy. And I try and do that every weekend. So I'm going to Denmark in a couple of weeks. I've been to Montenegro last week. I'm going to Paris tomorrow. So I try and do that as much as I can because it's so affordable. And we don't take advantage of that because there's so many places you could go and see. And it's amazing. Like we're so lucky to be part of Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. Is that like Ryanair that you fly?
Yeah, not just Ryanair. You know, you've got Ryanair, EasyJet, Jet2. I mean, they're all competing now, right? So we're in a great position as consumers because we can pick and choose. But Ryanair's the cheapest, but EasyJet is pretty cheap. And honestly, it's absolutely amazing the places you can go. And especially with now, like things like Airbnb and stuff like that, great way to see the world. And And I feel bad for you guys a bit. I've got quite a lot of friends in the US who are always messaging me like, oh, you're so lucky you get to see all these countries. When they come over to Europe, they will try and go to as many places as they possibly can to fit it all in. And they're just like, you've got this on your doorstep. We're so jealous. We do have the luxury of geography.
It's like the greener grass syndrome, I think. Everybody thinks that, you know, some other place sounds more romantic and more exciting and more fun and whatever. But yeah, to some degree. Yeah, but it certainly is fun. And I think international travel changes you. I've been asked this question multiple times, but I grew up, you know, in the southern part of the U.S. and my family has been in that area since the 1800s. And so much of my early days didn't include traveling much beyond the state that I was, like you mentioned about in Yorkshire. You know, that was sort of my upbringing, and I never imagined that I needed to learn a foreign language. Why would I need to do that? I did think about learning German at one point, but that was kind of hard. And then I was never afforded the opportunity to travel outside the US until I was in my early 20s, my first trip to Ecuador. But wow. We were working with the Esquichua Indians in the Andes Mountains. International travel changes you, as I'm sure you would attest. Mm-hmm. So intrigued by the cultures and the common human characteristics that we all have, but also the differences too. And so there's so many levels and ways you can connect to people.
I completely agree with you, Jeff. And I think actually it's the best education anyone can ever have, to be able to go and visit all these places in the world where you'll learn stuff about their culture. You learn things about yourself. It's learning to communicate. It's learning how to cook. It's learning how to get on with a multitude of people from different backgrounds, of different aspirations and different ways of life. And I genuinely believe that no school can give you the education that getting on a plane and going around the world can give you. And it's exciting that it's becoming more accessible for everybody. And I think it's so important that we take advantage of that whilst we can. Because, I mean, 50, 60 years ago, people weren't doing this. And I think that explains a lot behind why maybe two generations ago, their attitudes to certain things are so different to the attitudes of sort of 20 to 30-year-olds nowadays. They're a lot more open, a lot more liberal, because they've seen the world and they've seen actually you can coexist and you can learn about other cultures and you can experience things that make you grow as a person. And it's even just stuff like having initiative. I mean, I've been traveling on my own since I was 10 years old, and I always carry my own passport with me, I always have done. And it's just, when I get lost, I don't panic. I see it as a bit of an adventure. Whereas I know people who maybe haven't traveled as much, who if they've forgotten something or if they don't know where they're going, they might panic. And I think having the luxury of being able to travel in the past has meant that you kind of put it into perspective, don't you, a little bit more. And you think, it's okay. Just enjoy what's around you. Enjoy your surroundings. Take that road. Who cares where it goes? Eat in that place. We haven't seen the reviews. We don't care, because actually, inevitably, you're just going to learn from your experience. And I think languages opens that up and travel opens that up.
You made me think of a recent trip where I was in Osaka, Japan, and I was on a train going quite a ways, like several hours away. I don't know how familiar you are with the maps in Japanese train stations, but they are very hard to navigate, in my opinion. And it was interesting how people are willing to help you. You were talking about traveling since you were 10. It's amazing. People do try to help. And this lady realized I couldn't make out which train I needed to switch to. And she went with me on the next train to make sure that I got to where I needed to go. And thankfully, she spoke a little bit of English, because my Japanese is really bad. But it's fun to see also, as far as the adventure side of it, you know, people, instead of freaking out and getting too stressed out, there are people out there who will suddenly drop everything to help you if they realize you're in need and you don't know where you're going or whatever.
Yeah, of course. No, it's totally true. You've actually just reminded me. I think I might have told you this story perhaps in August when I met you in Chicago. About when I was in Shanghai. I was there just for 3 days. It's a pretty long flight, just for 3 days. And I had a meeting with a potential client. And then I left the meeting really happy, walking down the street, and realized that I didn't have any money with me. All I had was my phone and my notepad. Now, I don't know if you know, and or if your listeners know, but when in China, you are really limited to the amount of apps you can use. They don't accept Apple Pay. ATMs are really hard to find. So it was getting dark. I was in Shanghai, I had no idea where I was. Google Maps wasn't working. I couldn't get on WhatsApp. So yeah. I didn't know what I was doing. So I ended up having to take a bicycle from the side of the street, and I cycled through Shanghai trying to find my way home. Ended up getting to a ferry stop, and I saw this woman at the ferry stop. They don't speak a word of English. Obviously, all their signs are in Mandarin. I speak really basic Chinese. And I got to this ferry stop, and she was like, in Chinese, she said, "I need money." And I was like, "I don't have any." So I ended up, I managed to get on this ferry because I sang her a song and did a dance. And I at the time, I told myself she was so impressed with my singing that she let me on the boat. But in retrospect, I think she probably just wanted me to go away. So she ended up letting me on the ferry. I got back to my hotel about 3 hours later, and all my colleagues were like, "Where have you been?" I was like, "Don't even start." I was like, 5'9", blonde English girl on a tiny Chinese bicycle, going through one-way streets, being shouted at by the police. Honestly, but the moral of the story is you get there in the end. And it all adds up to a good story, doesn't it?
So. That's great. I don't remember hearing that one before, but so no, that's great.
Thank you, Chloe, for joining us on the podcast. This has been part one of a three-part interview with Chloe Richardson on the Global Exhibitor podcast. Stay tuned for part two coming up soon. If you want to reach out and connect with Chloe, you can find her on LinkedIn, Chloe Richardson, or you can get her email address from our show notes here on the podcast.
We like to remind people that all business is conducted within the context of culture. So each episode provides insights to help marketers understand the cultures they're trying to reach and strategies for building bridges across cultural divides. If you like the Global Exhibitor podcast, please share it with others, subscribe to it, and rate it on iTunes. We greatly appreciate the feedback. Please also check out our website and blog at www.globalexhibitor.com. And finally, if you or someone you know would make an interesting guest on this podcast, please let us know by sending an email to guest@globalexhibitor.com. And until next time, thank you for listening.